All right, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Tet Amud Aleph with the Mishnah. Aita umedet al rosh agag zarakola. She was standing on the top of a roof, and he throws the get to her. Kaven shehigia la'avir agag. Once it reaches the airspace of the gag, harizo migureshet. Then she is divorced. Hu milamalo v'hi milamato. If he's up above and she's down below, v'zarakola, and then he throws it to her. Kaven sheyatza mirshut agag. Once it leaves the area of the gag, nimchak on israf, it was erased or burnt, harizo migureshet. She is already divorced. So now, in terms of the Mishnah, you have a situation which the Gemara will get more explicit about. You have a chatzer and a gag. The gag is the roof of the house, which in their days was flat, and so they were part of the utility of the house, was the roof. So she's on top of the roof. If he throws her to get to the roof, then once it reaches the airspace of the gag, which we'll have to discuss what that is, the airspace of the gag, the get is considered to be given to her, or she's taking possession of the get. Other way around, if he's on top, on the gag, and the chatzer, the courtyard down below, and then he throws the get down to her below, into the chatzer, once it leaves the area of the gag, it becomes into, or it is considered a part of the area of the chatzer, which once again, we'll have to understand why that is. Why does that happen immediately? What Tosafot points out over here is that we saw yesterday a machloket about whether the woman has to be present or adjacent to the property when her chatzera is acquiring on her behalf. And Rabbi Ushayo said that she doesn't literally have to be there. Her chatzera could be in Tveria and she could be in Tzipori, as long as it is a chatzera mishtameret l'da'ata. So over here, why does the Mishnah give the example of Haita Umedet Arosh Agag, which makes it sound like she is present physically by the gag, which isn't necessary in these cases. So Tosfot over here says, according to Rabbi Yoshaya, what you have to say here is Hay Omedet is not literally Omedet, but rather Kamisha Omedet. Similar to the way that he explained it in the previous Mishnah, it's not literally that she's standing there, but it's the equivalent of her standing there, which means that it was Mishtameret, Midata. So you don't necessarily need physical presence, but we need the qualifications that we saw Rabbi Ushaya give in the previous Gemara. The Gemara says, "Valo mintar." The roof is not a protected area. As we've been saying all along now, one of the qualifications for the get to be a get is that it's an emakoma mishtamer. It's a place that is secure, so that when the get reaches that point, it is in a secure location. The gag, by definition, is not secure, because, as Rashi says over here, "Habi'ina navir shesofo lanuach." Need an airspace where it's eventually going to rest. On the top of the roof, it's unlikely to come to a rest because of the wind, because of the exposure to the elements. It's unlikely that the get will ever settle on the roof of the house. Even if you want to suggest that it would come to rest on the gag, it's still necessarily secure there, because the next wind that blows will take the get and blow it away. If it rains, it'll be exposed to the elements. I mean, there are numerous things that make it lo mintar. And therefore, how does it work here when it lands on the gag or it comes into the airspace of the gag that all of a sudden it is considered to be a get? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, begag sheish lo ma'akeh askinan, dealing with the roof that has a perimeter fence. There's something around it that protects the area, and therefore now you do have what is considered to be a secure area. Because of the walls, then the wind isn't necessarily going to blow it away automatically. And you consider it to be an area that not only has utility, but an area that is more mishtamer. Ula bar Menashe mishmei davyimei amar hacha bepachot mishlosha samuch legagak skinen. We're dealing with it once it comes within 3 tvachim of the gag. This is a principle that we've seen in other places of lavud, whereas when you're in 3 tvachim of the actual landing of the gag, at that point it's considered to be it on the gag itself. And so now that it's coming to rest on the gag, as Rashi says over here, the equivalent as if it's come to rest over there, and that's why she's koneit with the hanacha. Once it reaches the location within 3 tefachim of it, it's a chatzer mishtameret kol apachot mishlosha samuch legag kegag dami. It is within 3 tefachim of the gag as a din like the gag. And so Rashi had explained before that the failure in the get is that it was habeinan avir shesofo lanuach. You need to be in an airspace where it's going to come to rest. The two ways to accomplish that are, you have walls around the gag, then it's going to come to rest in there. Or you're already so proximate to the Gog that we assume that the get will reach the Gog for sure, and it will come to rest in the Gog because it's now reached the point where it's within three tefachim of the Gog, and we can assume at that point it will land on the Gog.
Right.
The second answer, I think, is a weaker answer than the first answer, because the presumption of the question was that it doesn't settle when it goes onto the roof. So if you say there are walls around it, so you have accomplished if you've dealt with the issue. In the second answer, you aren't dealing with the physical properties of the roof because the roof is still open and exposed. So the second question should apply. What the second answer does is redefine the question and says that the first question wasn't in fact that if it's on the roof, it's exposed and it's going to get blown around. Rather, how could she acquire in the airspace of the roof unless it actually landed on the roof? The answer to that question is, it's so close to the roof. I mean, it's within three tefachim. It's no longer considered to be the airspace. So in essence, the second answer redefines the nature of the question, which is, how does airspace work if it's not on the roof itself? And the answer to that is, you're so close to the roof that it's not considered to be airspace anymore. So now, Gemara continues, humi lamalo, if he's up above, and then he tosses it over the roof into the chatzer, once again, you have the problem of v'halo mintar, that it's not protected, and the assumption here is that the roof is higher than the chatzer, and so when he throws it over the edge of the roof, it's exposed to the elements, there's no wall surrounding it, so how are you going to deal with the fact that that becomes a get as soon as it leaves the roof and enters into the courtyard area? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kagon shayu mechitzot atachtonot otfot al elyonot. So the answer to this problem is that you have the equivalent of a square within a square. Let's assume that you have outer walls, which are the walls of the chatzer. Those walls are extremely high. Inside the chatzer, inside the courtyard, is another square, which is the house or some sort of building. And then the roof of the house is on top. That's where he is present. But when you're standing on the roof, the walls of the courtyard are higher than where you are. So now, because of that, once you let it go from the roof, you're already in the walled-in area of the chatzer, because the chatzer's walls exceed the height of the roof, and that's why it works over here. Because immediately, when it leaves the roof, it's in the area of the courtyard, and protected area of the courtyard, because it's below the walls of the courtyard. V'chein amar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Hoshaya, kagon shehayu mechitzot atachtonot, otfot al elyonot. Again, a similar answer, that the outer walls exceed the height of the Gog. So we have this Misora multiple times. We have it in Bavel from Yehuda Amar Shmuel. We have it in Eretz Yisrael from Rabbi Elazar Amar Rabbi Shoya. And we have it again in Eretz Yisrael from Ula, bringing it from Rabbi Yochanan to Bavel. So you have three different instances of the same Misora. Amale Rabbi Abba the Ula. Kiman, who does this halacha follow? Kirabi. Must be like Rabbi Damar, Kluta, Kamisha Unchadamya. That something in motion is considered to be at rest. He throws it over the roof. The get is still in motion at that point. The get has not settled down. Yes, it's within the courtyard. Yes, it's within the walls of the courtyard. But the get is still floating through the air. So how is it that that get is considered to come into her possession? Or munach. It's placed down in order for the kinyan to take effect. The answer the Gemara is suggesting over here is according to Rabbi, who says, Klukta kamisha unchadamya. Now, this is a principle that is argued in many places in Shas. The argument is not just between Rabbi and the Chachamim. There's also a third sheet of Rabbi Akiva, which complicates this situation, because, as we'll see in Tosfot, it doesn't seem that Rabbi's position really fits in here. In the most extreme form, which is Rabbi Akiva, Klukta kamisha unchadamya means that an object in motion, when you look at it, is made up of discrete points. Which is that instead of it being a continuum of motion, it's made up of multiple or millions of points. Which is that at every point, what Rabbi Akiva suggests is as if the object has settled and moved, settled and moved, settled and moved. That an object in motion is a compilation of many, many distinct points of stopping, going, stopping, going. The other way to view it, which is the sheet of the Chachamim, is that it's a continuum. That the object in motion will continue to be in motion, but the motion is done from the moment it leaves, whether the person's throwing it, wherever property it is, and so it settles wherever it's going to land. So those are the extreme opinions. There's Rabbi Akiva who says it's all discrete, and the Chachamim would say it's all a continuum. Rabbi happens to be a middle position, which is that when you throw it through a reshut yachid that is roofed, that has a roof over it, that has the status of kuta kamisha unchodamia. And that's what Tosfot is troubled by, which is tema. The nakat Rabbi, the lo ayri ele b'reshut yachid mikureh. Only speaking about a case of a reshut yachid that is covered. That's the only time where he applies his principle of kuta kamisha unchodamia. But otherwise, he doesn't apply it. The reason there it works is because Mishum, the Beta command the Mal Yudamya. Since it's a house with a roof on it, we look at the house as if it's totally full. We don't look at it as an empty house, we look at it as a full house. And therefore when somebody goes through it, it's as if it's stopping and going because it's going through a house that basically has objects in the way. Now, in reality, there's nothing there. But since halachically we look at it as if the house is full, it's as if it's starting and stopping through the house. That's Rabbi's opinion. So now, what Tosafot suggests is that Rabbi Akiva, havalei the minkat. Rabbi Akiva is the better opinion to place over here, because Rabbi Akiva is the one who believes that this works no matter what. Irrespective of the conditions, he says that it is considered to be a discrete point, and therefore, kuto kamishu kunta dami applies even without a roof, and without reshut yachid. Dilei kuto mishun chadami afilu b'shut rabim. So now, there are those that change the girsa, and have the girsa be here, Rabbi Akiva, instead of Rabbi. The Tosafot over here rejects that in the end and suggests that it doesn't work like Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva does not even require mechitzot. The whole setup here is that we set it up that the chatzer outside has mechitzot that are higher than the gag. According to Rabbi Akiva, you wouldn't need that, because as soon as you left the gag and was in motion, you would have these discrete motions where it's stopping and starting. It came to rest immediately in the chatzer, as soon as it left the airspace of the roof. So the fact that we're requiring mechitzot shows you that it's not Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And so the end, Tosafot has to settle and say, Levadai karabi mukmutla, mushani afilu teima rabbanan, and then the Gemara says, afilu rabbanan, ufi ze yecholiot taima, darabi mishum kirui kidamrinam bishabbat. That the possibility is here that there is some sort of walls, or a roof, and that's why the Gemara uses Rabbi's opinion, because, okay, maybe it's not a roof, but it is walls here. And so there's some connection separating his opinion from Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and that's why they picked Rabbi. The truth is that other Rishonim suggest that the reason that they chose Rabbi's opinion, it's clearly not Rabbi Akiva because of the walls, and the Rabbanan, you wouldn't have assumed it's them, because they see this as a continuum of motion, so they picked Rabbi, who is a middle opinion. Not to say this is Rabbi's opinion, or this is according to Rabbi's opinion, but this is similar to Rabbi's opinion. You'd have to use something along the lines of Rabbi's opinion, and therefore we're using him as a representative of an opinion that says that there are discrete points along a line, and those discrete points would make it as if it was munach in this case. So then the Gemara says, Amalei, Ula responded to Rabbi Abba and said, Afilu teimer abonon. Can you explain this according to the Shita of the Rabbanon, that it's considered to be a continuous motion? Adkan lo pligi Rabbanon le Rabbi yelo the inyan Shabbat. They only argue with regards to Shabbat. Avalcha mishum din turehu. Vaka mintar. Over here, you don't need it to settle. By Shabbat, there's a very particular need that you have akira and hanacha. It has to be picked up and then placed down in order for it to be considered carrying. So that's definition makes it necessary that you have an akiran anacha, and something in motion doesn't have an akiran anacha, according to the Chachamim. According to Rabbi, it does. According to Rabbi Kiva, it does. But over here, by get, there's a different requirement. We don't need akiran anacha. Anacha is not the definition of when the get goes into the other possession. The definition is mishtameret. Is it guarded? Is it in a protected space? That happens right away because the walls of the chatzer exceed the height of the gag. As soon as it leaves the gag, you're in the airspace of the chatzer, but also in the protected airspace of the chatzer. Maybe that would be sufficient, even according to the Chachamim over here. Even though it's in the air and it's in motion, that doesn't matter, because by definition, it will land in the chatzer now, because it's protected by the walls of the chatzer, and inevitably, it will land, and because of that, it's considered kamisha hun chodami, or mishtamerit enough, that is gone into her possession. V'chein amar Rabbi Asiyam Rabbi Yochanan kigon shayu mechitzot atachtonot odfot al elyonot. Again, here we have another member, Rabbi Asi, saying in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, this is the case. Amalei Rabbi Zerul Rabbi Asi keman. Who is this like? Kerabi. Must be like Rabbi's opinion. Damar kluto kamisha un chodamio. Here we had that discussion take place in Bavel, which is that Rabbi Avva is speaking to Ula in Bavel about this, and now we have Rabbi Asi speaking to Rabbi Yochanan about the same question in Eretz Yisrael. So you see here that the Gemara is bringing down numerous affirmations of either the conversation or the position here, but they're bringing one from Bavel, one from Eretz Yisrael, and then before they brought one with someone from Eretz Yisrael that moved to Bavel and discussed it, and also was brought down because that was a memra from Ula, and then it was challenged by Rabbi Abba. And also over here, they bring a memra from Rabbi Asi that is then challenged by Rabbi Zeira. So because of that, they brought numerous times the same memra. Same answer that was given by Ula to Rabbi Abba, so too Rabbi Asi gives the same answer to Rabbi Zeira, that it could even fit into the Shita of the Chachamim. Right now, the Gemara says here, Nimchak, it did mention in the Mishnah that if it goes out of the Gag, and if it's Nimchak or Nisraf, Amrav Nachman Amar Barbuah, Lo Shanu Ala Shenimchak Derech Yiridah. It's only if you got erased on the way down. Av Nimchak Derech Aliyah, if you got erased on the way up, Lo, then it's not the case. My Taima, Mikara Lo Laminach Kai. Because then it never was going to rest or come to rest in a proper manner. The way that Rashi explains here, Derech Aliyah, is that on its way up versus on its way down. Which means that on its way up, we assume that that is the Baal's influence on the get. Meaning that the gravity hasn't kicked in yet, and so when he throws it up, or it's an upward motion, then it hasn't really left the possession of the husband, because it's his koach, it's his motion or force that put it upward trajectory. As soon as it crests, and then it starts to descend, then gravity is taken over, and now, in essence, the Baal's influence over the get has been released, and therefore Derech Yiridah is already considered to be in the possession of the woman. So even though he's throwing it from the Gag into the Chatzer, and when he throws it up, it's still within the walls of the Chatzer, that still doesn't bring it into the woman's possession until it peaks and starts to descend. So that's what he's suggesting over here. Therefore, if it's erased or something happens to it in an upward motion, it still hasn't reached the woman, because we still say it's as if the husband is still holding it or influencing the get. Once it's peaked and starts to descend, the husband has lost any influence over the get, and it's deemed to be as if it's in the woman's possession because of the walls that are there. It's mishtameret in her chatzer, and therefore, if it gets erased at that point, she's already acquired the get, she's already divorced, and anything that happens after that does not affect the divorce. It ruins the get, I mean, in terms of a shtar raya, but it doesn't affect the fact that she's already divorced with the get at the moment that it comes into her possession. Your question's a fair question, which is that the way that Rashi reads it and the way that we're explaining it, it has nothing to do with the location of the husband. It simply has to do with the motion of the get. If the get is an upward trajectory, which means that the husband's force is influencing it, then it's not a get yet. If it's in a downward motion, then it's already, gravity's taken over. So if he's on the gag throwing it down, so he throws it up a little bit, and then it starts to descend. The other way around, if he's down below, and he throws it up, until it crests and starts to descend onto the Gag, then it won't be a get. Obviously, that'll be later when it's regards from the Chatzer to the Gag, then it will be from the Gag to the Chatzer, because it will crest earlier or faster, probably coming off the Gag to the Chatzer. That's the way that we explained it, and that's the way most of the Rishonim explain it. The Rambam, on the other hand, and the Magid Mishnah says that the Rambam believes that Derech Aliyah and Derech Yiridah are like what you're suggesting, depends on the location of the Baal. Which is that Derech Aliyah means that the Baal is standing in the Chatzer, sending it up to the Gag. So Derech Aliyah means that if it gets erased in throwing it upwards to the Gag, then it's not a get. Derech Yiridah is when he's on the Gag sending it down, because the natural motion is that it's going to go down. So when you're in the Chatzer sending it up to the Gag, the force is needed to move it from the Chatzer to the Gag. And therefore it's not a get until it reaches a settlement point, according to the Rambam, until it gets inside the walls of the Gag, or it's within three tvachim, then it becomes a get. On the way down, it will not have to do that, because by definition, as soon as he tosses it over the Gag, it's Derech Yiridah, and it goes down. That's the way the Rambam explains it. But again, Rashi and others say that it doesn't matter which direction you're going in, it happens to matter whether the husband's force is still felt on the get. Right? Nisraf got burnt up. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba, Bar Vuah Lo Shanu Ela Shekadam Get L'Dleika. That's only if the get was there before the fire was. But kadmat bleikah the get, on the other hand, if the fire was there before the get, lo, then it's not a good get. My taima, mikara the sreifa kazil. Because then it was destined to be burnt up. It's similar to what we just said in the previous case, that it is mikara lav leminach kai, that it's never going to get there. If there's a fire already in the courtyard down below, by definition, if the get lands in the courtyard, it will be burnt up. So that means that since the final destination of this get is to be burnt, she can't acquire it in that interim stage because that get is being basically thrown the ibud. And so therefore it doesn't function in the interim to become a get before it gets to ibud. On the other hand, if he throws the get and only later does the fire enter the picture, then originally when the get was released, it would have come down to rest in a place that's mishtamerit and is not thrown the ibud. So we just said before also, that if it's derech aliyah versus derech yiridah, that mechika influences that issue because if it was thrown up and it gets erased, that means that it was never destined to make it to a point where it would come to rest in a place fully as it gets. It's going to be wiped out before it ever gets there. The same thing with the sreifa. If it's already destined to be burnt before it gets there, then even the interim stages don't allow you to get divorced. Amar Rav Chista, Mishuyot Chalukot Bigitin. That there are different spaces by Gitin. The way that Rashi defines it over here. Im Hishila Ba Makom Bechatzero. Her husband lends his wife a space in his chatzer in order to take possession of the get. Then he lent her the space in his chatzer, not other areas or rishiyot. So for instance, he has a house. He has a roof of a house. He has a courtyard. If he lent her the courtyard to acquire the get, that means that he lent her the courtyard, not the house, not the roof. If the get lands in one of those other two locations, she is not divorced because she was only granted that location. What he is saying is that we differentiate between locations, and we don't just say that, well, it's all owned by the Baal, so why does he care if it's in the chatzer, the gag, or the house? The answer is there is. Every area is considered to be distinct. And because of that, when he lends her that distinct area and not the other possession. Amale Rami Bar Chama Larova. Minale L'Sabaha. How does the elder one know this? Meaning reference a term of kavod, obviously, where he says, the elder of Chista, how does he know that this is the case, that there are different rishiyot in Gitin? So Rova answers him, Amale Matznitanhi. It's our Mishnah. Haita umedet arosh agag, v'zarako la. And then he throws it to her, Kevin Shigiaget Avira Gag, Arizo Megureshet. So if she's on top of the Gag and he throws it from down below and then it reaches the Gag, she's divorced. But my iskinan, what's the case there? Ilema Begag Dido, Vichatzer Dido. If it's her roof and her courtyard, Lamali Avira Gag, then why does it have to reach the Gag? It could have been fine in the Chatzer. As soon as it gets to the Chatzer, it's fine. Why do you need it to reach the Avir Hagag? Ella, so what are you going to suggest? Begag didei v'chatzer didei. It's his gag and his chatzer. Ki yigiel avir gag, my havi. When it reaches the airspace of the gag, what has happened? Nothing's better than when it was before. It's still in his possession, not in her possession. Ela pshita. What must be the scenario in our Mishnah? Begag dido v'chatzer didei. It's her roof, his chatzer. Ema seifa. Then what are you going to do with the latter case in the Mishnah? He's on the roof, she's in the chatzer. Vizarakola, and then he threw it to her. Kevin Shiatsai Mirishuta Gag. Once it leaves the Gag area, Nimchako Nisrafa is a Mugureshet. She's divorced, even though it got erased or burnt up on the way down. Vibe Gag Dido, the chatzer Dide. If it's her roof and his courtyard, am I Mugureshet? Then why is she divorced? I mean that here you have the reverse case, but if you maintain the same nature of ownership, then her being on the gag and his throwing it down to the courtyard, what does it help her that it's going down to the courtyard that's his? Being on the gag that's hers is a much better scenario. Ela begag didei v'chatzer dida. Must be that it's his roof and her chatzer. So the Gemara says, Reisha begag dida v'chatzer didei, Seifa begag didei v'chatzer dida. How could you do that? You've now set up the Mishnah with two opposing cases. That the Reisha is a case where it's his chatzer and her roof, and then the reverse in the seifa of the Mishnah, which is, it's his roof and her chatzer. That doesn't seem to make sense. Ela lav must be the ushla makom, that he lent her a space. He lent her a space in the chatzer, or he lent her a space in the gag. Dechad makom ushla inche. And this is what Rova's proof is from our Mishnah, which is that a person lands one space, not two spaces. We saw this principle back on Daf Ayin Zayin, which is that if he grants her space to acquire the get, he only grants her one space, not his entire ownership or his entire property. And therefore she gets whatever distinct space he offered. Did he offer the chaser or did he offer the gag? Whichever one it is, that's where she can acquire the get, not in the other location. That's why it has to leave the chaser to go to the gag, or leave the gag to go to the chaser, because it needs to get to the location which he lent to her. And that would be a proof to Rav Chista's position that there are reshuyot with regards to gittin. There are distinct locations, and until you reach the distinct location which she was given to utilize, it's not a get. And we don't just assume, he gave her the roof, he also gave her the house and the chaser, whatever she needs to get the get. That we don't assume, because a person lends one location, not multiple locations. Amrlei. So Rami Bar Chama responds to Rava and says, Mideiria. Who says that? Dilma hakadita, vahakadita. Maybe each one according to its case, exactly what you wanted to suggest. Ein ochanami. The Mishnah can be read in that way, that Reisha begag didah v'chaser didah. The Reisha is talking about her roof, his chaser. Seifa begag didah v'chaser didah. And then the Seifa is talking about a case where it's his roof and her chaser, because that's the nature of the cases here. They're trying to come up with different scenarios. They are reverse of each other. And based on that, it's fair that you would reverse the ownership or the properties in this instance. So, based on that, you could read the Mishnah as not being a proof to Rav Chista. Obviously, what Rava says is, okay, even if you want to suggest that that's the way you're going to read the Mishnah, and each case is unique, nevertheless, you have two cases that are almost identical, and really don't teach you so much of a chiddush in switching around the cases. What is the reason the Mishnah did two cases? Must be to teach the din of Rav Chista. That's what Rava will have to argue against Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama simply says, I have two scenarios. In each scenario, you have to set up the properties to make sense or to make it relevant to the case that we are speaking about. Amar Rava, Shalosh Midot Begitin. Rashi says over here, there are three Chalukot Midin Shari Surim. We have three dinim by Gitin that are unique to Gitin and don't apply by other cases or other halachot, mainly because of what the requirements are by Gitin. Gitin have specific requirements that allow their din, or make their din different than other places in halacha. Adam Rabbi, kluta kamisha unchuncha, that Rabbi says in general that when you have an item in motion, again, with all the hearot of Tosafot, that Tosafot points out that it's not so clear that Rabbi has this as a general position, that an object in motion is considered to be moving through discrete points. Upligi rabbanan alei. Hani milidei in Shabbat. That's only true in Shabbat. Avahocha mishum din turehu vamintar. That's what we already saw in explaining our Mishnah, that the rabbanan can fit into our Mishnah. So despite the fact that they argue about this halacha in Shabbat, nevertheless in Gitin, everybody agrees that the halacha is this way, because the necessity for the rules by Gitin are different than that by Shabbat. By Shabbat you need Akira and Hanacha. By Get you just need Mishtameret. That different qualification makes it that you can hold like Rabbi's opinion here and still argue with him in Shabbat. V'adam Rav Chista, Ha'atz Kaneh Birshut HaYachid. Person puts a post or some sort of column or beam in the Rishut HaYachid. U'Baroshot Raskal. And on the top of it there is a basket. V'zarak. And then he threw it, v'nach al gabav. And then it lands in there. Afilu gvoa me'ama. Even if it's over 100 amot high, chayav. He is considered to be chayav, lefi, she reshut ha'yachid ole ad ha'rakia. Because reshut ha'yachid reaches until the sky. So here, if a person is in reshut ha'rabim, he throws an object into, quote unquote, reshut ha'yachid. It doesn't land in reshut ha'yachid, it lands on this post that has a basket on top of it. If it lands in that basket, it still considers as if it landed in the Rishut HaYachid, no matter how high that basket is, because the Rishut HaYachid extends upwards without a limit. The truth is, the Rashi doesn't necessarily have the Girsa of Baroshot Raskal, because that's not necessary. In a Rishut HaYachid, if a Rishut HaYachid extends up the Shamayim, as long as the object comes to rest, then it doesn't matter if it lands in a basket or it lands on the top of the beam. You should be Chayav for landing in the Rishut HaYachid. Where the Traskal makes a difference is if you have a post in Rishut HaRabim. If you have a post in Rishut HaRabim and then you have a basket on top, that's 4x4 amot, then if it's above 10 tefachim, then again it takes on a status of Rishut HaYachid. And that's why it'll be relevant that there's a basket on top. But inside a Rishut Yachid, you wouldn't need a basket to make it into a Rishut Yachid because it's already in the Rishut Yachid in this space. So that is somewhat of an issue here. Why do you have the Traskala? Why is the Traskala mentioned here? The Rashba wants to suggest, for one of two reasons, they might need the Traskala here. It either might be because, according to the Shita of the Chachamim, you need a Makom Chashuv. In order for something to be deemed a Hanacha in Shabbat, it has to land in a location that has significance. If it landed on the top of the beam, it wouldn't be a location of significance, and then wouldn't be considered a Hanacha. So you need the Traskala not to make it into a Rishut Yachid, but to make it into a Machom Chashuv, a significant location that's considered to be a Hanacha. That's one answer. Or it's a Chiddush in Gitin, which is what we're about to see here. Hani Milia the Inyan Shabbat. That's only true by Shabbat. Over here, by the case of the get, it needs to be guarded or protected. Valo Mintar, and it's not protected. So it might be that the Chiddush is the other way around, that you need the basket over here, because you're right. Gavei Shabbat, with or without the basket, is deemed to be a Rishut Yachid. But what you show here is, even with the basket on top of the pole, if the get lands in there, it's not considered to be a makom ha mishtameret. It's not considered to be a secure location, and it's not a get. So if you had just given the example of the pole, you would have said the reason it's not a get is because it's not secure. But if you had a basket there, it would be secure. If you put the basket there and say it's still not secure, that's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is that by Gitin, even with the basket there, it's not considered to be a secure location. Even though we've seen before in the previous Mishnah and the last yesterday's daf, that be kilta. By her basket, if it lands in her basket, it is considered to be a possession. So what you have to say here is the location of the basket being up so high makes it a makom that is not mishtameret. If it's a basket on the ground and he puts it in her kilta, then it would acquire on her behalf because that's her kli and that's considered to be mishtameret. When it's up on the top of a pole, then it's not considered to be a makom and mishtameret, and that's how we would distinguish between this case and the cases on the previous amud. So that's number two. V'ha'adamar av Yudam Shmuel. Here's the third difference by Gitin, which is lo yamod adam begagze v'iklot me'gishamim migagosho chaveiro. Person shouldn't stand on his roof and then stick his hand out and collect the rain that is falling on his friend's roof. K'shem she'diurim b'chalukim milamata. Because just like the living space below is separate, kach duyurim chalukim milamala. So too, the roofs are considered to be separate rishiyot tayachid. Unless you have an A roof with your neighbor, if you have a semi-detached house, then just like each of your houses is considered to be distinct property in rishut tayachid midrabanan, and therefore you would need an A roof to carry from one to the other. So too, if you go up to the roof, even though the roof is a single area, there is no definition or separation between the roofs. It's one big roof that has one big wall around it. Nevertheless, they are considered to be two rishuyot. The dividing line is the wherever the wall is between the two houses, that will divide the roof in half as well. And so in Shabbat, the roof is not considered to be a single location, but rather a dual location. Now, this is not so simple for a number of reasons, one of which is that Shmuel himself paskins like Shita Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon has a Shita on the Gemara and Shabbat that all Gagot, Karpifot, and Chatzerot are considered to be one Rishut. They're all one big Rishut, and you can move from one to the next without any problem. Over there, Rabbi tells the story how they used to go to the Mayan, to go to the mikveh on Shabbat, and they carried the towels by jumping from location to location, like the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Shimon. Over here, he's suggesting that a roof has distinct ownership, and yet Rabbi Shimon says that all the roofs are considered to be one area. So that's the first problem you have in Shmuel. The second problem you have here is, the fact that Rishiyot or Chalukot is not a din of Shmuel, that's a Mishnah in Eruvin. Mishnah Eruvin tells you that there are different locations and different Rishiyot. Why are you bringing Shmuel when it's an explicit Mishnah in Eruvin? So Tosafot raises both of those issues and says, "Ish lamar, to Shmuel sabrata mafilu mechitzot sheina nikarot amrinan, gudasik mechitzot abayit lamala, umetar letatel migag labayit." First of all, he says the reason the Gemara brought Shmuel and not the Mishnah is because you would explain the Mishnah in a case where there is some sort of dividing line on the roof. When we say that the roofs are separate, the Mishnah means that there was a wall or something that indicated that this is the end of my house and that's the beginning of your house. But Shmuel's din applies even if there's nothing on the roof that indicates where the division of the line is. The fact that you have a wall between you and the house, we say, Gerasik, as if that wall goes up to the Shamayim, and there's an invisible division up there, even though it doesn't exist. So that's number one, why we brought Shmuel instead of the Mishnah, because Shmuel teaches us that Chirush. Miu anan karav kamilan, dematzrich mechitzot nikarot. Nevertheless, we pass on like Rav, who says that we need mechitzot nikarot, but that is the Chirush of Shmuel, and that's why the Gemara brings it over here. Now, Tosfot has to answer why, if Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, are we bringing Shmuel to say that the Rabbonon over here, that the Gagot are considered to be separate? It says, v'shema Shmuel nami nakat milte kekulei alma. That Shmuel just wanted to fit into all the opinions here. The Rabbonon migag the Gag, the Rishimon migag the Bayit. That for the Chachamim, it would reference the Gag to another Gag. For Rabbi Shimon, it would mean migag the Bayit. So it's not that he holds like the Rabbonon. He just brings his opinion that we're bringing Shmuel over here is that he can even explain this according to the Shita of the Rabbanon, but that doesn't mean he holds like the Rabbanon, and we know that from the Gemara in Erevin that he holds like Rabbi Shimon. So it's not that this is giving our psak halacha about what Shmuel's position is, it's simply saying, Shmuel says, everybody can fit in over here, and everybody could have this distinction. Which is now that Shmuel says that you have this distinction between the roofs, Hani Milian, the Inyan Shabbat, that's only true by Shabbat, the Inyan Get, Mishum Kpedahu. The problem I get, as we've noted already, is when the husband lends her property to use for the acquisition of the get, the reason we say that she only gets that property and nothing else is because a person lends one property and not multiple properties. So if he lenders this location, he's not lending her the other location. That has to do with kpeda. A person's makpid only to lend a certain space, not to give all your space to the other party. So now, v'kuli hai lo kapte inche. On the other hand, over here, people are not so makpid, which means if he owns, for instance, both houses down below, and the roof up top, roof is one big area. So now he lent her the roof on the left side. What happens if the get lands on the roof on the right side? Well, based on what we said till now, he only lends one location, not two locations. And that's corroborated by the din in Shabbat, which is that the roof is considered to be separate. The left and right side of the roof are separate because the Shabbat, you can't collect water from one roof to the other roof. The answer is, not by Gitin. By Gitin, it all has to do with Hakpada. And when you have a large area of the roof, then people are not makpid to say, oh, this is my side, that's your side, don't walk over onto my side, don't come here. A roof is an area of utility, which is not as distinct or private as the house. And therefore, if you go up onto the roof, if the husband said, I lent you the left house's roof, doesn't mean that she can't acquire on the right house's roof, because when he says the roof, he means the whole roof can work, even though there are separate and distinct spaces, like we see by Shabbat, that they have different dinim to the different sections of the roof. By Gitin, that won't be the case. You know, with regards to house, it will be a distinction. If he says, I'm lending you this house on the left side, then she can't acquire in the house on the right side. But on the roof, which is considered to be a more open utility, and people aren't so makpid because they're not always up there, like if a guy walks over, people use one side or the other side of the roof, they're not so makpid. And because of that, if he lends her one side of the roof, it works when she accepts the get, or the get goes to the other side of the roof. So there you had three examples where you have a din by Shabbat, and yet by Gitin the din is distinct or separate because of the difference in the nature of the halachot by Shabbat versus what we need by get. And it has to do with the unique properties of get, which is that it needs to be makom mishtemeret, and also has to do with hakpada. Those two things change the din by Gitin versus that which is by Shabbat. Amar Abaye, shtei chatzerot zo lifnei mizo. You have two courtyards, one is captive to the other. So you have an internal courtyard and then an outer courtyard. Pnimit shela, the inner courtyards are hers, pechitzona shelo, and the outer courtyard is his. Umichitzot achitzonot odzvot ala pnimiyot. The outer walls of the outer chatzer are higher than the walls of the inner chatzer. Zarakola, and then he throws it to her. Kevin sheyegela veir mechitzot achitzona. As soon as it reaches the airspace of the outer courtyard, harizo migureshet. She is divorced. My daima, pnimit gufa, the internal courtyard, b'mechitzot achitzona kamintura, is protected by the walls of the outer courtyard. So now, if you think about this, you have a captive chatzer inside, and then you have a outer courtyard. The same thing as like we were saying before by the gag and the courtyards, you have a square inside of a square. The inner square is her courtyard. The outer square is the perimeter of his courtyard. Now, he owns the perimeter, basically, the area around her courtyard. He has very tall walls. His walls are so tall that they exceed the height of the inner courtyard walls. What we're suggesting over here is her inner courtyard, which is hers, Once it comes into her courtyard, she is divorced. So when does it enter her courtyard? Does it only enter her courtyard when it clears the walls of her courtyard? I mean, it's descending into her courtyard and goes below the wall level of her courtyard? Or do we say that even when it's in the airspace above it, well, let's say it goes into that airspace and it's below the walls of the outer courtyard, then it already becomes her get. Why? Because the outer walls of the courtyard have a dual function. The outer walls of the outer courtyard both protect the outer courtyard and the inner courtyard. They're in a sense mishubad to the inner courtyard because they function not only to protect the outer courtyard, they also protect the inner courtyard. Given that, if he threw the get over the wall and now it's descending into her courtyard, it's above the walls of her courtyard, but below the walls of the outer courtyard, it's a get already. Because that's called a makom ha-mishtameret. It is a protected space because the outer walls protect the inner courtyard as well. And the airspace of the inner courtyard is protected by the walls of the outer courtyard that are higher than the walls of the inner courtyard. So mashen kein bikupot. That is not true when you have two baskets that are together. Shtei kupot zo betok zo. If you have one kupa, one basket inside another basket. Pnimit shela, the inner basket, is hers. V'chitzona, shalom. And the outer basket is his. V'zaru akola, and then he throws it to her. Afilu igyela avir pnimit, enu migreshet. Even if it reaches the airspace of the inner utensil, she is not divorced. My taima. Dalonach. It didn't come to rest. Gemara says, let's take a step back and say, v'chinach, my havi. Even it comes to rest, even it stops moving, why is that helpful? Kelav shalokeach b'shut morcherhu. This is the discussion that we already had before with regards to if you have the property or utensils of the buyer inside the property of the seller, can they acquire? Does that give that person enough ownership and distinct ownership that they can acquire on behalf of that individual, which is a machloket? And now, based on this, you're going to have a conclusion to that machloket that it does work. Because if it comes to rest inside the inner basket, you're saying it's going to work. Why should it work? This is her kli inside of his kli, or in essence, her kli inside of his property. We don't know if that works. And if you're telling me it does work, then you paskin with regards to this matter. His basket does not have a base to it, does not have a floor to it. So his basket is simply walls. It's just a weaved area that delineates mechitzot. She then has a basket inside of that. And then the get goes into her basket that's on the inside. Her basket both has a base and walls. What we're suggesting over here is that the get is not considered a get until it lands in her inner basket. It's not her kli inside of his property because he doesn't have a base to his basket. So she's not sitting in his basket. She is protected by the walls of that basket, but not inside, literally sitting on the basket. So now, as Rashi notes over here, what's the difference between the baskets and the courtyard? The answer is, v'ein michitzot kli asuyun le'aviran, which more. The reason that you put walls in a kli is not to protect from outside elements. When you put up walls in a chatzer, you do put them up for privacy, but you mostly do it to protect from objects or elements from the outside entering into that area. V'ein kli asuy ela aniach b'tocho. But the kli is the reverse. The reason you have a wall and a kli is because you want it to contain whatever is inside the kli. So the function of the walls in a courtyard versus a kli are actually just the opposite. By a courtyard, the walls are there to protect from the outside coming in, whereas the walls of a kli are to protect from what's inside going out. Because of that difference, it'll make a difference in whether it's called mishtameret. When the courtyard, it goes into the walls or the area of the courtyard that is protected by the walls, it's now in an area that's mishtameret, because the whole purpose of the walls is to protect from the outside elements. When it comes to the kli, even if it's in the wall space of the kli, that doesn't make it protected. Because the point of the walls is to stop it from going out, not from things coming in. And so therefore it's only considered nach, or quote-unquote, a makom mishtameret when it comes to rest inside the kli, not when it's still descending inside the kli, even though it's in the wall space of the kli. But that's the nature of the difference between walls of a kli and the walls of a courtyard. Or that's what the point that Abaye makes here, that you'll have a different din when it comes to a captive courtyard than when it comes to a captive kli, because of the nature of the difference in the walls. So Tosfot over here disagrees with this point in Rashi and says that the problem with the mechitzot kli versus the mechitzot of the chatzer are not because of the way Rashi defines the purpose of the mechitzot, but rather the scenario is where the get never comes to rest. So in the case where the get never comes to rest in the inner courtyard, the walls of the outer courtyard deem it as if it was mishtameret, and that's good enough for the get to be deemed a get, since the outer walls are a permanent fixture to the inner courtyard. On the other hand, when the get is descending into the internal kli, and the walls of the outer kli are around it, those outer walls of the outer kli are not permanently there, and therefore it's not deemed as if it was nishtameret until it literally lands inside of the internal kli. And that's the difference between the scenario by the kli and the scenario by the courtyards. But obviously, according to Tosafot, if the get reached within the walls of the interior kli, she would be divorced. Because the only question here is about the exterior walls, meaning the outer courtyard or the outer kli. By the outer courtyard, those are permanent fixtures. So therefore, when it descends below those walls, she acquires the get immediately. Whereas when the get descends below the walls of the outer kli, since that kli is not a permanent fixture with the internal kli, therefore those walls are not deemed to be mishtameret or a part and parcel of the internal kli. But if it does fall into the walls of the inner kli, then according to the Tosafot, that would be enough to be deemed a get, whereas for Rashi, it would not be a get until it literally lands inside the internal kli. And there are others who explain here that the failure on the inner basket is the fact that the outer basket is mevatel, the significance of the inner basket. So therefore, when the inner basket was placed down and it was her basket, that was her property. But once the husband put down his basket without a bottom to it around it, he was mevatel the significance of the inner basket, and that's why the inner basket doesn't have an ability to acquire on behalf of the wife. Rashi over here notes that the outer walls of the outer courtyard are mishubodot. They are basically obligated or encumbered to the inner courtyard. That's a very strong statement, because that means that the outer courtyard would then have to confer, if they wanted to take the walls down or lower the walls, then they would have to consult with the inner courtyard to do that, because the inner courtyard has some sort of halachic rights here. So Tosafot says, lav dafka. He says he doesn't think what Rashi is saying is literal, and he doesn't think it's right. He says that what it means here is not mishubadot in the halachic sense, that the inner courtyard has some rights of ownership in the outer walls, but simply, since the walls are a permanent structure, and they're not moving, we assume that they function to protect the inner courtyard, even though it's not that the inner courtyard owns the walls or has any rights to those walls, but it's a simple fact that once you descend below the walls of the outer courtyard, it's protecting the inner courtyard, and those walls aren't going anywhere, and they're not changing. Obviously, if you take them down, it'll change the situation. But as long as they're there, they act to protect the inner courtyard, even though the inner courtyard may not have any rights or ownership in those outer walls. Next Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Poter Adam Ishto Beget Yashan. So again, this is something we saw earlier in the Masechta. We saw this with regards to a get yashan, which is a get that was written and then given to her at a later date. Meaning that the date in the get is not the same date as when she received the get. There is an elapsement of time in between. But not only is there an elapsement of time, they were mityached. They were secluded between the time of the writing of the get and the time of the giving of the get. So that raises the issue that if they had yichud in that period of time, there's a possibility that yichud was not just yichud, but it was something more than yichud. If it was something more than yichud, there's a possibility that she becomes pregnant and she has a baby. So the issue, and that's what the issue will be, is that pregnancy now will be in conflict with the dating of the get. Which is that, Beit Shammai Omrim, that if you have a get yashan, you can use it. Beit Hillel Osrim. Beit Hillel says no good. Beizu get yashan. It's if he was secluded with her after the point that the get was written. But my kamiflege, what is their machloket? We don't worry about the fact that people will come to say that the get is dated before the birth or the conception of this child, and therefore the child was born out of wedlock. Not that there's an isur with regards to being born out of wedlock, it's simply that it's a begam, that it's going to cast aspersions on this child, that he was born out of wedlock, which is, again, not born the derech kedusha in a proper manner. But why is that coming up? Because even though she was divorced after she got pregnant with this individual, nevertheless, the get shows a date that was prior to that period of time. So Beit Shammai says they'll figure it out and they'll realize that she got divorced afterwards. Beit Hillel, Sabre, I'm reading Zera Shemiyom Rukita Kodim Livna. We worry about the fact that they're going to go back after a couple of years, you know, 10, 15 years, nobody remembers what happens. They look at the date in the get and they say, this kid was born after the dating of the get, which means that he was born out of wedlock. Obviously, it's not just born, it was conceived out of wedlock, but by the date that he was born, we can tell that he was conceived after the date in the get. As Tosafot notes over here, the Yerushalmi points out that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel's opinions are consistent with their shitot later on in the Masechta, which is the reason a person is allowed to get divorced. Beit Shammai says a person is only allowed to get divorced because matzah ba'ervat davar, that there was a problem of arayot or something that was serious and significant in terms of her behavior that caused the divorce. And therefore, since she is, quote-unquote, ma'us, disgusting to him, if they're mityachev, you don't worry about them consorting together because the assumption is that he has no interest in her anymore. Whereas for Beit Hillel, who has a broader swath of things that a person is allowed to get divorced for, meaning for any reason, if he just doesn't like her, then the possibility of them having yichud could likely end up in bi'ah because the divorce wasn't premised on a act that was so unacceptable that the husband would not want to be with her anymore. If she already marries based on this get, even Beit Hillel agrees that the get is a good get and we don't force her to divorce. This is even one step further, that if she was divorced through such a get, we would not recommend it. Once she is already divorced through that get, she can go get married with this get. So the first statement of Rabbi Abraham Shmuel says that only b'diavad, if she is already married using this get, we don't break up that marriage. The second statement says, we don't recommend using this get, but if this get is used, then if she's divorced, she can go and marry the chatchila, not even just b'diavad, the chatchila, she can get married. Obviously, that is a greater kula in that instance. And obviously, if we can get the husband to give her another get, we would ask him to give another get. As Rashi notes over here, her husband went overseas now. We can't get him to give another get, or he's recalcitrant in some way, then we'll use this get, because that's all we have. But if we can get him to give another get, of course, we'll try to get another get out of him and get this to be clean. All right, next Mishnah. Kotav lushum malchut she'enu ugenet. They dated the shtar based on the Roman Empire, which we'll see in the Gemara later on what the malchut she'enu ugenet is. But you're living in Bavel, and you date your get based on the Roman Emperor's rule or the dates of the Roman Empire. The Shumachut Madai, or again, you're in Bavel and you're using the Median calendar or kings, the Shumachut Yavan, or using the Greek kings or emperors, the Binyan Abayit, the Churban Abayit, or you do it based on the time that the Beit HaMikdash was extant, for the time it was built, how many years after the building of Beit HaMikdash, or how many years after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. You're using some dating system that is not in effect in the location where you are. So you're in Bavel, and using a dating system that's not relevant to Bavel, whether it's Madai, whether it's Rome, whether it's the Churban Abayit or the Binyan Abayit. None of those are relevant dating systems within Bavel. So those are problems for the get. Hayav b'Mizrach, v'katav b'Ma'arav. He was in the east, and the get says that he was in the west. B'Ma'arav, v'katav b'Mizrach. He was in the west, but the get says he was in the east. Then if she is remarried with such a get, the get is pasul. That pasul, the fact that the get is pasul now leads us into a situation that you might remember from the Mishnayot and Yevamot, which is that if a woman who we are makil by to get married al pi ed echad, or afilu al pi edim she'enem k'sherim because of aguna, we said there that if she gets married and then her husband shows up after supposedly being dead, then we penalize her that she has to lose out on both sides. She loses her original husband and her new husband, the children of Mamzerim from both parties, and we'll see now all the penalties that are associated with that. The reason for that by the Aguna was because we wanted to make the back end severe so that even though we're makil in the front end, she'd be careful about it because the repercussions of being wrong are so significant that she'll be careful. She won't just willy-nilly get married. Oh yeah, my husband died. No, she'll check into the matter. She'll make sure that that's the case. So over here also, you have a similar nature of penalty, which is getting married with such a problematic get, leads to all of these penalties, which is that she has to divorce both of them. Tzrichah get mizeh mizeh, and she needs a divorce document for a bill of divorce from both of them. So Rashi says over here that she needs a get from both parties, even though the second party doesn't really need a get, because she's still married to the first individual. So she definitely needs a get from him. We give a get from the second individual so people don't say, oh, she divorced the first guy, married the second guy, she doesn't need a get from the second guy. So we force her to give a second get just to clear that up or that possible misinformation. Tosafot says that's not correct. The truth is that she needs a get from the second guy because the get is kasher midoraita. The failure in the dating system here is only a psul midorabanan, not a psul doraita. And so because of that, she really is divorced from the first husband and married to the second husband. And that's why she needs a divorce from the second husband, because she needs a divorce midoraita from the second husband and a divorce from the first husband, because we're saying that the get was pasul. And so if the get was pasul, we need to get a get from the first husband to show that she got a get from both parties. So Tosafot explains the reason for the get, just the opposite of Rashi. He says, doraita, the second person needs a get. The first one needs it to get rid of the misinformation or possibility that people think that the get was pasul, and that's why she needs it. Whereas Rashi says the opposite. She needs a get midoraita from the first one. And the second individual, she needs a get just to dispel anybody thinking that she was married to him and didn't get divorced. Vein la lo ktubah, she loses her ktubah. Velo peirot, and she loses out on her peirot. The way Rashi defines peirot here is din peirot. She learns out on the din of peirot, which is the Chachamim instituted pirkuna mishivya tachet peirot. Her redemption from being a captive is in exchange for her peirot. And here she has no claim of peirot. And seemingly she also has no claim of redemption. If she's taken into captivity, he doesn't have to redeem her. Whereas Tosafot says the meaning of peirot over here, and he argues on Rashi in numerous places in Shas, but Rashi says the peirot referred to what comes as quid pro quo for the peirot, which is her pirkuna, her being redeemed. Tosafot says literally it's the peirot. If the husbands ate the peirot, even though they weren't entitled to them, or even after they weren't entitled to them, they do not have to return that to the woman, they don't have to repay her for that. And that's what it means, she loses out on her peirot. Below mizonot, she doesn't get mizonot, which is not entitled to be fed or taken care of by the husbands. Velo blaot, the bigadim that she brought into the marriage. That normally when they are worn down, those bigadim come back to her. The leftovers or the residual of the clothing that she brings into the marriage, she takes out with her. The blaot of nichsei tzon ubarzel, which is he brings in the item which he assessed the value of, and then he has to return her that full value. Not only does she get the value, but she gets back whatever's left over of those bigadim at the termination at the end of their marriage. Tosafot over here disagrees with Rashi's explanation of the blaot. Rashi says here it's the leftover clothing that still exists. Whereas Tosafot says, no, it's the blaot that were taken. The existing blaot she can take. But the blaot that he ruins or keeps after the fact, she doesn't have a way to extract them, or she can't demand payment for them. So all of these things are a knas. These are all fines against her, because, as Rashi says over here, di bayila akruya legito. She should have read her get. Which is the bottom line here. The penalty here is because she didn't take care to read what was inside the get. She didn't make sure that the get was done properly and had all the proper trappings and information that needed to be in there. And so because she didn't take that care, she's penalized here with losing out on both ends. She doesn't have rights to make claims from mizonot, peirot, or blaot from either party, from either the first husband or second husband. Im natla mizeh umizeh, if she does take them, quote-unquote, illegally, takzir, she has to return them. I mean, that just because she takes them doesn't give her ownership or a chazaka in them. We don't say, okay, look, she shouldn't take them, but she took them already, they're hers. No, even if she takes them, we penalize her and tell her to give them back. Vavlad mamzer mizeh umizeh. And the child is considered to be mamzer from both of them. Now, obviously, children that were born to the first husband prior to all this whole incident are definitely not mamzerim. Children from the second husband are mamzerim, right? And if she goes back to her first husband and has children with him again, they will also be deemed to be mamzerim, at least midrabanan. And obviously, Tosafot would think just the opposite with regards to the mamzer here, which is that the children born to the second marriage are not mamzerim, only mamzerim midrabanan. And the children born, if she goes back to her first husband, would then be mamzerim d'oraita. Because the get was a good get midoraita, it's only pasul midrabanan. So his mamzerim will be just the opposite of Rashi's mamzerim because of the difference in which they think is the good get doraita and which they think is the get derabanan. V'lo zev v'zev mitamim la, if they are kohanim, neither of the husbands can be metamei to bury her. V'lo zev v'zev zakin lo b'mitziyata v'lo b'maseyada. The husbands do not have a right to her property, meaning that if she has a mitziyah, or her output, which normally would belong to the husbands, they do not have a right to it. V'lo b'afarat nidara, and they don't have a right to nullify her vows. Because all of these chuyot, all of these rights to the husband, are so there won't be any eva, or shalotid gane al ba'la. And so, since those rights are all to benefit or promote the marriage, here we're not trying to promote the marriage, we want the marriage to dissolve. So, we don't grant those rights to the husbands, because we don't want the marriage to stay intact. Hayta bat Yisrael, if she was a regular Israelite, nifselet min akuna. She now gets deemed to be a zona, because she now had, quote unquote, an extramarital affair. She wasn't really divorced from the first husband. And now she married a second guy. So essentially she was still married to the first husband when she was together with the second guy. She has now an illicit relationship which makes her into a zona. A zona is precluded from marrying a kohen. So Bat Yisrael in this situation would no longer be allowed to marry into the kihuna. The truth is that she's problematic because she has a divorce. She's a grusha. But what I have to say is that since the first get wasn't even a real get, that she really was never divorced, and she has the status of zona. Or this is just in the continuum of the next items that are mentioned here in the Mishnah, or the fact that if a kohen actually does marry her, he'll get malkot, not only because of grusha, but also because of zona. Bat Levi mina maser. If she's a bat Levi, then the knas is that even though generally this would not posel her from going back and eating maser, nevertheless, this will, and we'll say she's now deemed to no longer have the status of a bat Levi, and she cannot return to her father's house and eat maser. Bat kohen mina truma, she's a daughter of a kohen, then she's precluded from eating truma here, because if she is a zona, then that extramarital affair not only precludes her from being married to the first husband, not only better the second husband, which are the baal and the boel, but also precluded from truma. Then Yoshim Shozev, Yoshim Shozev, Yoshim Tubata. Neither the children of the first husband or the children of the second husband are entitled to inherit her ktuba. The Gemara will ask, we just said before she doesn't get a ktuba, so what are they fighting about? The answer is, ktubat benin dichrin. The institution of the Chachamim, that the Yerusha of the husband is split up between the children depending on the wives, level of ktubah. That has influence over the division of the husband's property, that their mother's ktubah is paid out first, and then only the excess is split between them. That has to do with the fact that we wanted to encourage the fathers of the women to give them yusha, to give them nidunyot. They'd only do that if they knew that their grandchildren were the inheritors, and not the other wife's children were the inheritors, otherwise the property could leave their family and move to the other family. So that's ktubah benin dichrin. Bim meitu, if they die, achiv shozev, achiv shozev, chutzim lo biyabmim. Neither one of the brothers can perform a levirate marriage over here, so they both have to form chalitza, because technically she was married to the first one. She forms chalitza from both of them and not yibum with either of them. Shina shimo, ushma, shemiro, v'shemira. If the deficit in the get was not what we said before, the dating system, but rather the essential information that defines it as a get for these particular individuals, which is his name, her name, the name of his city, and the name of her city. As Toswit over here notes, it doesn't necessarily mean that they changed the names, they got the wrong name or the wrong city in there, but simply that there might be two individuals with the same name in that city, or there's some sort of overlap that does not make it clear who is the party to the divorce over here. All of those are essential information identifying the parties in the divorce. If any of those are wrong or changed, then teitzei mizeh mizeh v'chol adrachim ha'ilu ba. Then she has to divorce both parties. Again, it's not a good get. Whenever she remarries with that get, then she has to go through all of this. All these penalties apply to her. Tosfot also notes over here that the changing in the name of the city is only relevant to the city in which they live currently, not their birthplace. Even though, as Tosfot notes, there was a practice that they used to put in the birth cities of the individuals as well, he says that is not posel to get because it's not necessary. That's extra information that's not necessary to get, and therefore there's a mistake in that information. It's not posel to get. Because if it was posel to get, he said, then we wouldn't be able to write it based on the testimony of the individuals. Meaning that if the husband or the wife tells you they were born in this city, you wouldn't be able to believe them. You would have to have edim to corroborate where they were born. The fact that we don't require edim, the fact that it's not necessary, so once we put it in, if there's a mistake in it, it doesn't affect the kashrut get. So when we're talking about here that the name of the city was changed or problematic, that's in reference to the city in which they currently live in identifying them. And Rabbi Benenu Tam makes a broader statement about this, which is, that there's a general principle that if you put extraneous information in the get that's not necessary, if there's a mistake made in that information, that does not posel the get. So it's not only true by the city, it's true of any additional information that's put into the get. Anything that's not absolutely necessary, if there's a mistake in that information, that doesn't detract from the kashrut get. And that is, kesuvaru, teidim lo kaimi ala ikar maaseh. The edim are only coming to testify about the major act that's being done here, which is the act of the divorce, and not about all the pratim and all the details that are found in the get. Kol arayot shamru tsarutayem mutarot. Any one of the arayot where we say that their tsarot, co-wives, go free. Halchu atzarot ha'ilu v'nisu. If these co-wives, based on the information they had, went off and got married, v'nimtzu elu ailonit, and then they figure out that the other woman was an ailonit. Teitzei mizeh umizeh v'chol adrachim ailu ba. Then they have to divorce their new husband, their old husband, and all of these penalties will apply. This goes back to the Mishnah and Yivamot. The Mishnah and Yivamot say that co-wives, only one of them is subject to Yibum. So as long as the brother takes one of those wives, then that woman is the leveret marriage, and the other woman goes is released by the marriage of the first woman. If one of the co-wives somehow is a relative to one of the brothers, then she is precluded from performing Yibum because she is an erva. Not only does she release herself because she's an erva, she also releases the co-wife, who is then protected by the erva of the other co-wife. What the Mishnah is describing over here is that that protection is provided as long as the woman who is an erva was a woman who was, first of all, properly married to the first husband and would be a possible wife to the yavam. The problem with an ailonit is she's not a batbanim. She's unable to give birth. She's not a child-bearing woman. A child-bearing woman, first of all, if she's found out to be an ailonit after the fact, is a kedushei ta'ut, which means that her first marriage was on a mistaken premise. And number two is, she's not subject to Yibum because there's no Yakum Hashem Achiv. She doesn't have children that will provide the child that will replace his brother or be in his brother's name. So because of that, the ailonit is disqualified here, is not even relevant in the picture. So if they find out after the fact that the woman who's a relative to the brother was the ailonit and never really married to the first husband and not relevant in Yibum, then the co-wife was required to do Yibum or Chalitza, at least Chalitza. So if she goes out and gets married and then the information becomes available that she is subject to Yibum or Chalitza, she has to divorce her new husband, but also can't go to the Yavam. She can't go back in that direction. Konesi Yivamto, if a person marries his Yavama, and her co-wife then goes off and gets married, this is what I described before, that the Yibum of one of the co-wives releases the other co-wives. The one that he took as the Yivama turns out to be an Ailonit, a woman who can't bear children. So now the other co-wife is subject to Yibum now because she was not protected by the Yibum performed with her co-wife because she wasn't really a wife or she wasn't really a Yivama because she doesn't bear children. So again, the penalty is Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh V'chol Adrachim Ha'ilu Ba. Again, she's subject to all of these penalties. Katav Sofer Get the Ish V'Shovar or Shover the Isha. If the sofer wrote the get for the husband, and then he wrote a receipt for the wife, and basically they're going to exchange documents, which is the get he'll give to the husband, the shovar he'll give to the wife, then the husband will give the get to his wife, and the wife will give him the shovar, and now she's divorced, and he has a receipt for the fact that he paid out her ketubah, and everything's fine. Vita'a. But except the sofer made a mistake. At time get the isha, and he gave the divorce document to the wife, and shovar leish, he gave the receipt to the husband. Vinatano zelazeh. And now they exchange documents. But in the end, when they exchanged documents, the woman gave her get to the husband, and the husband gave the shofar to the wife. Now all of a sudden they look, ulachazman. Now they all of a sudden look at the documents, right? Get yotze miyaraish. All of a sudden the get's in the husband's hand, v'shofar miyaraisha. And the receipt is in the hands of the woman. They have the wrong document. Teitze mizeh mizeh, v'chola derachim elubba. She married based on that divorce document. Again, all these penalties apply because she never really got divorced over here. And she, again, should have looked at the document to see that she never had a receipt in her hand but had a get in her hand. Rabbi Elazar or possibly Rabbi Eliezer Omer, im la'altar, if this information becomes available and known right away or apparent to us immediately, ain ze get. Then the get is not a good get because we assume that she never got her get, and therefore it's not a good get. Im lachazman yatsa, if this information only comes out after a period of time, then the importance of an after a period of time over here means after she's already married, after she's already in a new relationship. Harizeh get. That is a good get. Lo kol haymenu min harishon labeit zchuto shel sheni. Because the first husband can't come back now and cast aspersions on the divorce when she's already married to the second husband, as Rashi says over here, we worry about knunya. We worry about collusion over here, which is that the wife is colluding with the first husband to get out of her second marriage. And therefore they're saying, oh yeah, we were never divorced, or that I was never paid my ketubah. Whatever the reasons are that they're trying to create this collusion, we worry about that. And therefore the first husband doesn't have a right to then declare, oh, I have the get in my hand, she was never divorced, because we assume maybe the wife gave him the document and she gave her the shofar to come up with this story in order to get her out of the second marriage. So we don't believe them. We worry about collusion, so therefore the get is a good get, and she remains married to the second husband, because the first husband has an incentive to hurt or ruin the situation with the second husband. And therefore, we don't believe him after time, according to Rabbi Elazar. According to the Tanakhama, obviously, if the document's there, what's the get doing in your hand? That's enough evidence of the fact that the get was not given originally. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on Pei Amud Aleph.